88.5 KRFY, community-supported public radio for North Idaho.
Good morning. You've tuned into The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack, and across from me is Jim, your usual Thursday morning co-host.
Ta-da! Good morning, everyone. Happy Thursday in the middle of January 2023.
It's the 12th already.
Can you believe that?
The middle of January. You're right. It feels like it's still 2022.
You know, had me fooled.
Yeah. We are here on a rainy, snowy kind of, I would call it snow. There was snow on the car I had to brush away. It was not rain that just wiped away.
Go away. Yeah, when I came to the station here, it's 6:30 this morning, it was doing nothing.
It was snowing on my way in, but it sounds like that precipitation will continue, but it's going to get wetter. The prediction for today, and I'll just go right into your weather forecast. Currently 32 degrees and a high today of 39. The precipitation, 90% chance, and this current rain-snow mix is going to be turning just into rain today, with the snow level rising to 6,300 feet.
Oh, my goodness.
It's very high.
Oh, my goodness. So there might be snow up high.
Yeah.
Way up high.
How high is 6,300 feet? Where's Schweitzer at?
I think it tucks away around there. But okay. The thing is today you want to be in that 10%.
Yes, that's right.
You know, yeah, and you you'll stay dry.
Yes, don't be in the 90%.
You'll be wet.
Rain is likely tonight, and then patchy fog and a chance of rain as the night wears on, with the low of 38 degrees. Not even freezing tonight. The high tomorrow, 44, warming up, and patchy fog and only a 10% chance of rain tomorrow, 50% chance of rain on Friday night, and a low of 35 degrees. The high this weekend, 41 on Saturday with a 50% chance of rain, and the same on Sunday, 41 degrees, 50% chance of rain. That's what you get.
Early spring.
And then Monday is a holiday. It's Martin Luther King Day, and we have a 30% chance of rain and snow and a high of 39 degrees. So this kind of weather is what we're getting, but today is the big rainy day, and then it's just going to be a little bit warmer. And yeah, well, early spring, like you said.
If you're going out, be careful because with your footing, because there is still a lot of clumpy ice everywhere, and navigating might be a little bit difficult.
How's your driveway, Jim?
Not bad. We had, should we introduce Patty Erickson and Hannah Combs, two of the folks, along with Mary Tolan, behind Busy Buzzy Bumbus Bee, Can You Color What I See? How'd I do on that?
Great. Very nice. It's a bit of a tongue twister.
There you go. It is. Good morning, Hannah. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have both of you here. We had an adventure yesterday morning when we had a huge moose. Huge.
Uh-huh.
Sitting just in our front yard, chewing its cud, running around from window to window in the garage and whatever to get a picture of it. I mean, we know they're in the area and we see them around town, but this one was just plop. Dead center, right in our front yard. And so immediately we're walking around, you know, taking pictures, Facebooking it, and sending it to family members. I mean, and then, you know, everybody's green with envy because, you know, we live in a space.
Just one? Was it? Or it, a family?
This was a big one.
Just Just one big moose.
And then I was sort of like, "Woo, this is so neat." And then a friend of mine yesterday was having coffee and showed me a picture of one with a rack.
Uh-huh.
And do you guys get moose?
Yeah, we do.
Mm-hmm. And do they sort of account for you and you go about your business and they go about theirs?
Absolutely. They just ignore us. There's one young one in South Sandpoint that's a little sketchy.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it looks wary and yesterday was following people. In fact, it sat behind.
No.
Yeah. It sat behind our neighbor. He was reading next to his fire pit and it was about 4 feet behind him. I think it's lonesome.
Yeah.
Well, if you look out our backyard, you can see the big open expanse behind Alpine Vista on Pine. And a couple of days ago, we saw, I think this probably moose, you know, walked around the corner and just plopped down in front of like the window in their eating area. And it's sort of like Alpine Vista hired because we could see bunches of faces coming to the window. Do you get moose at your place?
Yes. It was a nighttime moose this year.
Okay.
And it was a frightening kind of experience. It was like, what is that noise outside? You know, and then it stood up and walked away. And then it was like, oh, geez, it was a moose. Didn't know, had no idea what it was, just heard this loud kind of banging and I don't know. Or it sounded like something large moving around right outside the house and up against the house and sort of,
wow,
what was that? And then, just turned out to be a friendly moose.
I'm sort of, you know, that, you know, you, and they are, moose are dangerous, but they must adapt to vehicles going by, traffic patterns of people, because I don't read in the newspaper anybody getting trampled by a moose.
Yeah.
Or cars hitting them.
You're right. You don't hear about that as often. I mean, deer is constantly, and I would guess because they're slow and very visible, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not, I mean, unlike a deer, which will just dart out in front of you. The moose is kind of,
I don't think we use the word dart, right? With moose.
No. Yeah.
Lumber.
Yes. You can usually see it moving around.
Yeah. But they must adapt to all of the hubbub around them. The other thing I think is that I think, would a dog bark at it?
Some do and some don't. We have one dog that will bark at moose and the other one just is super interested.
Okay.
And we can walk by with unleash and the dog just watches and the moose watches the dog. And
interesting.
It's just fine.
Yeah. I noticed from when I lived in South Sandpoint that you could always tell just by the behavior of people where the moose was. Especially like if you were out on a walk, you'd know blocks in advance, you know, cars are pulling over and and other people are walking like, hey, there's a look out. It's about three blocks away and it's heading this way or it's heading west or whatever.
One of the charming photographs of a moose is on downtown First Avenue at the corner of Main and First Avenue. That's as neat as can be. You know what? They're doing shopping or what's up, moose? Maybe a moose could be the next coloring book.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Let's start chatting with Patty and Hannah. Patty is, I take it you and Mary were the starters for this project and Hannah came along to illustrate?
I live near the Arboretum.
Okay.
And so I walk through there very regularly. And I also have grandchildren who love to color. I love to color, by the way. And
cool.
As I was walking through, I was thinking, this is a great place, a good setting for some kind of storybook. And then I knew about the Native Plant Society's grant, and I talked to Mary and said, what do you think of this idea of doing some kind of book? And she may have said coloring book.
Ah, okay.
And then, so the two of us decided it would be a good idea, and then Hannah and I are friends, and she said yes to getting on board. We wrote the grant.
Okay.
To the Native Plant Society's Lois Wythe grant. And we received the grant last March, I think.
Yeah.
And the rest is history, I guess. Now, we met a lot. We talked about how the story would go. We talked about the style of illustrations, which Hannah can certainly talk about.
And you and Mary wrote the text?
Yes, we did. And we laughed the whole time. So.
Children playing in the park, riding bikes, taking hikes, swimming in the great big lake. Then a big and bouncy wind makes the trees and flowers shake.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yes. And Mary's background in elementary education, especially early childhood education, there's a lot of theory and practice in the importance of rhyming and how vital that is for learning to read.
That was one thing that was really exciting for me coming into the project. The fact that both Patty and Mary are educators and learning that there is a lot of methodology behind this, or there can be a lot of methodology behind a project like this. It's not something that was just thrown together spontaneously.
So have you ever done this as something like this before?
Well, I've drawn since I was a kid.
Right.
I've done lots of artistic type projects, but this is probably my first, this is definitely the first book I've illustrated. I've done some covers for The Reader, which is always a joy, but yeah, this was definitely a whole different scope of project.
Okay. Patty, you mentioned rhyming is important.
Right.
What else? What are some of the other considerations? And then we'll go to Hannah. She has the words, and next comes the illustrations.
Well, I think one of the most important things for me is the idea of environmental generational amnesia. The idea that the baseline that children have isn't the same baseline that you and I have, that older people have. And it's a changing baseline. So even a degraded environment looks normal at some point. And then the expectation is that it won't be any better than that. So it's a complicated thing.
Okay. Well, I'd like to go back to your first conversations with Mary. Did you talk about maybe a butterfly, or maybe how did you end up with a bee?
Pollinator.
Ah.
We really did want to have that emphasis on a pollinator, something important in the environment.
I just saw in one of the back issues of National Geographic a close-up of a pollinating bee, and it was covered in something yellow, just coated. And I wonder if it knows that.
Ooh, that's a good question.
Does the bee know that besides, dipping into the flower and getting some nectar or whatever, that partaking in a process that maybe, they just get all the good stuff on their wings and whatever, and then they go to the next and push it off. I wonder
how conscious they are of what important role they're playing.
Absolutely. Cool. So you decide on the bee.
Yes.
Okay. And then what did you go from there in terms of what you're going to include with the bee?
Well, we wanted it to be a book or a story that children could relate to. So an adventure in the park.
Okay.
And we wanted to use as many of the elements of the Arboretum as drop-off points.
I noticed that. I just leafed through it here while we were sitting here, even in this room, and I spotted several recognizable landmarks from what is that, Lakeview Park, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is very cool. I mean, especially for local kids, I'm sure it has appeal all around. But I was like, oh, I know this path. That's neat.
I like, by using the bee, it gives us a reason to have the character visit lots of different types of flowers, because they would naturally have that impulse to be out pollinating. I do also like some of the touches that make the bee a relatable character to kids. So not only are they visiting the flowers to pollinate them, to do what a bee would do in that environment, but the bee is also out making friends and, like, being curious about what is this animal I'm seeing, or, is that a bear in the tree? They have this sense of curiosity.
You do have a bear. You did put a bear in the tree.
There is There is a bear in the tree.
I know. I saw that. Another thing that, that Hannah did, I remember as a kid, you know, the drawings that would have, find seven birds in this picture, you know, and you did it with find the fairies.
Yeah, that was fun. That was an idea that Patty and Mary brought to me, and it was really neat to try to hide them in the picture in a way that they would be semi-disguised, but also not too hard to find.
Exactly. So what's the age group?
About 4 to 2nd or 3rd grade. Okay. But I've gotten feedback from 12-year-olds who've gotten the book, mm-hmm. and they weren't so interested in the story, but one little girl in Australia who got the book.
Oh, really?
Who is 12, just grabbed it and said, "This is my inspo." And I said, "What?" She said, "This is my inspiration for drawing."
Aww. Oh, how wonderful. Isn't that sweet?
So I think, in fact, I like to color these illustrations. So I think mm-hmm. the illustrations themselves lend themselves to an older audience as well.
Well, there's my sister colors, and she's in her 70s. If she's listening, mm-hmm. she turns 80 this year, so I can say she's in her 70s. Oh, wow. But she colors.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I think you go into different bookstores and you find a sophisticated, you know, not just, mm-hmm. you know, what I grew up with, but really. So there must be a rebirth of coloring books as a way to calm one down and be creative and.
I think so. Maybe Hannah could talk about the stylistic choices that we made, because when we were discussing the book and the setting, we also talked about what kind of illustrations we wanted, because there's the typical fat, round bumblebee that's like four circles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So maybe we could talk about.
Yeah. When I come to any sort of drawing project, it's always exciting to, you know, try a new style that fits perfectly for the goals of whatever project. And we did talk quite a bit about what style this book should be in, and we talked at length about how complex the drawing should be. And I think where we landed was, even though this book is targeted at that, you know, maybe kindergarten, preschool through 2nd or 3rd grade age group, that we wanted to show all of these natural wonders in their full complexity, not just so the more ambitious kids could really get their coloring skills sharpened, but so they would have an understanding of what these plants and animals really look like in nature, so that, you know, if a kid is taking their coloring book into the arboretum itself, they'd be able to look at the picture and potentially look at a plant or animal and recognize that they're the same thing. So we wanted kids to be able to understand what the anatomy of a bee looks like, that they are so much more complex than four circles with some stripes.
One of the fun things was Hannah came to one of our get-togethers, and she had a little plastic container with a real bumblebee in it. It was a passed away bumblebee, but did you find it?
My partner found it in our yard and brought it to me, and it was so neat. I just had this little case I put it in, and that little bumblebee was my drawing inspiration. I would pick it up ever so gently by its little wing and hold it in different directions in order to draw it. So the bee that you see in the book is based on a real bee that actually lived here in Bonner County this past summer.
That is very cool. One of the things was making sure that the bee is hard, a real bee, like Hannah drew, is hard to make it look friendly.
Yes, that was definitely one of our challenges, because before we started drawing the actual coloring book pages, I did a variety of samples of what the character should look like. And that was really good feedback I got from Patty and Mary, that some of my early sketches looked like a bit of a scary bee. And we didn't want our main character to frighten any of the readers. So we worked on a lot of different facial features, so to speak. I learned through this process that bumblebees actually have 5 eyes, which is so cool. But for the sake of, you know, making the bee look friendly, our bee has 2 eyes that are noticeable. So things like that helped us kind of, in a sense, bring a little bit of a relatable human character to our bee while still retaining its actual, real, natural splendor.
It's sort of interesting with, like, bugs in nature. If you see them up too close, like ants, they really do look frightening. You want to keep them a little bit away from you because, you know, and I'm quite sure that there are other insects as well. Other people would find it absolutely, totally fascinating, the 5 eyes. But, you know, you want to draw the child in, and you don't want to scare the child.
Yeah, and that's a good point. When you think of any of those insects or animals, you know, the vast majority of their features they have for a reason, whether it's their, you know, maybe their stinger on a bee or their little pincer, their mandibles on an ant. They have those for a purpose, which is natural and important to their, you know, their function in nature. Unfortunately, there weren't many. There's one drawing toward the end of the book where I was able to draw the bee at a pretty large scale. And that was neat because we were able to show a few more of those features than on the other pages. But yeah, they're fascinating. I love the opportunity to look at these animals and plants at such close detail in order to see how they actually are put together and how they work out in the environment.
Another thing that we sorted through as we were planning was which plants to highlight, because there are way more plants in the Arboretum than those illustrated. And, you know, part of the conversation was which ones might be available for people to see easily on the pathway, and which ones would we imagine the bee actually going to. And so it was really interesting. And then how much of the arboretum should we show? You know, should we show the trees and the actual arbor? And, you know, how we focused less on physical human-made structures, we really focused more on the plants and this singular bee.
And where is the arboretum located for somebody who might not know?
It's on South Ella. But if you don't know that, it is on
In Sandpoint,
on the west side of Lakeview Park.
Okay.
So the entrance to it is, you know, the Lions building that is on the property of the park. It's right behind that.
Cool. I'd like to ask, and then we'll take a music break. We've got a bee song in the queue. I'd like to ask Hannah, when you know, obviously a coloring book is different than, let's say, a watercolor, because you've got to create spaces for people to color in, you know. And, you know, when I think of, like, the Sahara Desert, you know, you just got sand and sky, you know, and what do you color in there? But what was your approach to, like, ooh, I'm going to add some, like, I'm looking at the path here, some stones here that can be colored in. What's your approach to knowing that you want to create something that's going to be colored?
Well, I don't know if I have a scientific answer.
Okay.
I'd say as I was drawing it, I was thinking back to when I was a kid and loved to color, and just adding features or details that I would have found exciting to draw. So, like you mentioned, the path, without the little pebbles in it, it's just 2 lines, which you can color right. in, but it's not very exciting compared to the plants that are on the same page. So by adding a few little circles on there, you know, kids can color them all gray, or they could color one pink and one green and one blue, and it just gives you a lot more options for fun, I think.
Do you color, Jack?
Not in years. But I expect I'll be starting to color more.
I'm sure you will, with James on the horizon. Yeah.
right now, he has some We're right now we're working on keeping it on the page, so we're not even to keeping it within the lines yet. But did you look at other coloring books for inspiration?
Oh, we did.
Yeah,
we definitely did. Mary mm-hmm. had a collection of coloring books, and then I took a trip down to Vanderford's and looked at coloring books, bought a few because I have grandchildren, so I can always have those on hand for
you
those
bet.
Visits. And yeah, we did. And we looked at different styles. That was part of the style thing.
Mm-hmm. But any particular come to mind that you, you know, took inspiration from or anything like that? Or it maybe not titles, but anything in particular that you said, we like this, don't like that, that kind of thing?
I have to admit, I didn't do my homework as well as these two did. I didn't look at too many coloring books. And in some ways, I wish I had. One thing I noticed after we finished it was that the line weight or the thickness of the lines is pretty much the same for every object on every page. And after we finished this project, I did see a few other coloring books, and I was like, oh, wow, they really made that pop because they made the line weight heavier.
I would never think of that.
Like that.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Nope, not something I would think of either.
So if Patty and Mary came to you, let's say, with, let's do one on butterflies, mm-hmm. would you start changing the thickness of the lines?
I think it's something I would consider for sure. I think they obviously did their research better than I did, but...
No, your result is perfect.
Oh, well, thanks. But there's always more to be learned, and there are a lot of amazing artists out there to get inspiration from.
Well, one of my memories, I don't know about you folks, but... growing up, we had crayons, and I think there was one pack of 8 and then like 32. Mm-hmm. And what I always found frustrating as a kid is that I'd use like red and it'd be like a stubble. And here's another color that is as fresh as can be. And I couldn't figure out where that would go. So at times, you know, crayons were, you know, they should give me 2 reds and take away that whatever color that I didn't use. You know, I should be able to create my own pack of crayons.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, what's the white for?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that was, and you put it on, and then you'd get whatever color that was close to it on the white.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Am I alone on this? Come on, I want to hear some support.
You're correct.
I can support you, because in nowadays, I think a lot of people have an enormous number of crayons and pencils and things like that. And in my childhood, a pack of 16 was a very big deal. And then they went to 32 and then 64 with a sharpener built in. And that was like the gold standard. If your parents could provide that for you, it was just amazing.
I had a friend with the 64 pack, and I remember lusting after the Purple Mountain's Majesty crayon because I thought it was so beautiful.
Did they start naming them like that?
They have fancy names
rather than
now.
Just like purple.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No kidding.
I wanted that crayon so bad, but I had to learn how to mix, you know, color the red and then the blue
red
over
and the blue.
It to mix them. Yeah.
We're here having a conversation with Patty Erickson and Hannah Combs. I knew that was going to get me. Busy, Buzzy, Bombus Bee, Can You Color What I See? Adventures in the North Idaho Native Plant Arboretum. And we're going to take a break and talk more about it. We've queued up a Rolling Stones song from their first album that I can remember buying back in 1964. England's newest hit makers, the Rolling Stones, and here is I'm a King Bee. The Rolling Stones with I Am a King Bee. Hannah, did we decide? And Patty, was it a king bee or a queen bee?
We went neutral bee on purpose.
Okay, just asking. That was from their debut album in 1964, way back when, called The Rolling Stones.
Their American debut.
And the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Now I just want to talk about the Rolling Stones, but let's talk instead about...
we'll have the Rolling Stones on next week.
Yeah. Busy Buzzy Bombus Bee, Can You Color What I See, is the title of the book, and it's available where?
It is available locally only, and it's available at downtown at the Museum Store, at the Carousel Creations, Vanderford's Bookstore, and the Corner Bookstore. And it is also available at All Seasons Floral, which is one of our sponsors. Maybe we should mention that while we're jumping in there. And it has to do with funding such a project. Mm-hmm. We did get the $500 grant from the Native Plant Society, but that wasn't enough, even though we really didn't spend a lot of money. The actual printing of a project is expensive, and during the process, printing prices also went up, like everything. So we contacted four local nurseries or garden centers, particularly looking at ones who were local and also were supportive of native plants. And so we have All Seasons Garden and Floral, Cedar Mountain Perennials, Pondre Garden Center, and the Astor Garden Design Center, who all generously supported and got an ad.
Mm-hmm. Superb. Without their support. When did you, from the beginning, let's say the seeds of this with you and Mary, to it being an accomplished fact, what was the time span?
I think... in the fall of, and I get my years mixed up because COVID made me not.
Yeah, track it. Was that 2020 or 2021?
Yeah. We put the grant in 2022.
But you were planning in the fall of 21.
Yeah, fall of 21 planning, and then got the grant, and we had kind of, in order to write the grant, we had to have a framework, a real loose framework. And then that went to the Native Plant Society, and they gave us the grant. And then in March of 2022, we really started our very focused. And people kept saying, will it be there by Christmas? Will we have it for Christmas presents? And we refused to make any promises, but we did get it out before Christmas. So
pulled it off.
10 months project?
Yeah, yeah. And we're so grateful also to Selkirk Press, who printed it. They were wonderful to work with and helped us hit that deadline, even though we couldn't make any promises, but they helped us get it out before Christmas, which was so.
So what are your memories of this? I mean, in terms of what stands out in the creative process? And because this is a collective, there's three of you, and what stands out in that joint collective creative process?
I think just the fact that it was a collaboration, that it was something that we all had a passion for and were excited about. I mean, some of my best memories are, you know, sitting in Mary's living room, drinking tea, talking about bees and where we wanted the coloring book to go. It was just a lovely environment in which to create something like this. And I think just all of that good energy behind it made it something really special.
Okay, you mentioned earlier, Hannah, that you learned about thicker lines, thinner lines. How about you, Patty? Did you learn anything in the process that if you did decide to do another one, what would you improve on? What would you do differently?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know.
Okay.
I was so happy to get this completed that we haven't actually talked about more projects. I'd want to work with the team again. I can't. And this team was so much. We had so much fun doing this.
That's
book.
The whole point.
And
isn't it?
I love collaborative. A lot of my academic career was collaborative, doing multiple authored things. And I find that the best ideas come out of those collaborative experiences and not sitting in your little living room all by yourself.
Hmm. Who is the publisher or who printed it for you?
Selkirk Press.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just curious.
Here
I was
in
looking
town.
For that in the in here, and I didn't find it. Did you? Was this all facts you had off the top of your head? The back page after the coloring book is over contains some scientific names of the flowers in the flowers and the bee, of course, which is it's a common bumblebee, but it's scientifically called a bombus.
Ooh. Yes, and it is the that is the scientific name. Mm-hmm. Luckily, the person I live with is a scientist, and I had gathered some facts about bees, and he looked at those and he said, "Those are honeybee facts.
Oh.
Honey, those aren't bumblebee facts." And so I had a bunch of inaccurate information. Also, mm-hmm. we were really lucky because he caught us on the spelling of bombus, which would have been a disaster if we had.
In big letters.
It's in big letters all over the place. But anyway, the facts are actual bumblebee facts.
And it alliterates, you know, the title of it. Who colored the cover?
I did. I painted it.
Okay.
With, let me see, it was gouache, which is sort of an opaque watercolor.
Okay.
But we had quite the time trying to get it scanned and, you know, get the image cleaned up in Photoshop so that it was as crisp and bright as possible. That's something I learned about this process is to
the technical,
just the time that has to go into the technical polishing of the project. I was really happy when I painted it. I painted all of the flowers and the bee on the cover, but I left the background blank because when I've worked in gouache before, if you have a big area of paint in one color, it tends to look a little, it can get a little muddy, just not really attractive. So we finally figured out through our combined trial and error how to scan the flowers and the bee in and then put a blue background behind them, which to anyone in the publishing or design world might not seem like such a feat. But for us, it was quite the accomplishment.
Actually, getting the whole thing printed and made into PDFs and JPEGs and everything for the printer took us 30, 40 hours. It took a whole week of work sitting at the computer, running scans. Every scan was at, 1600 DPI?
Yeah.
And every scan of that high intensity takes 5 or 6 minutes, maybe more.
We did a lot of, we had a lot of nice conversations, drinking tea, waiting for the scanner to process these images.
Yeah. took a very long time.
Did so Hannah, your process was pencil then pen or?
Yeah, I sketched them in pencil and then again this shows you how little I know about the design world. I sketched them in pencil, then got out the tracing paper, went over it in black.
Okay, not on the same paper.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we were able to put the tracing paper into the scanner, but then, you know, when you scan it, it still has like the background had this like kind of gray, dirty tinge to it. So then we put them in Illustrator and vectorized the images so that we'd have that really strong black and white pop. And then we scanned and rescanned and I probably need to take a class in actual, you know, Adobe.
is it the size that you drew it in? Shrunk? Enlarged?
It's pretty close. I think I used a larger paper, but drew it to the size we would want it. It
looks like it's 8.5 by 11, the book. Which is a nice size for a coloring book, I have to say. And fits nicely on your bookshelf.
Absolutely.
The end result is beautiful and you can color it. Do you have any recommendations? Crayon, marker, whatever you want.
Pencils.
All of the above. Glitter pens have been popular with some of the people that I've talked to. The bombus bee done in a glitter pen is quite lovely.
Glitter pens. That's new to me.
And
I don't think I have a glitter pen.
Selkirk Press did give us a thicker weight paper.
which is so, important for for coloring.
So you might be able to even use markers. I don't know if it would show through, but
and on the back cover, there's a sort of a maze from a tulip to the hive, I think, and then find the words, certain words along with the facts. You know, you've included education along with fun of coloring, you know, the naming the flowers and...
Yeah, and I think that's kind of fun. We were laying out this page with the different, you know, Latin names for the plants, and trying to fit all of them on the page was not feasible. So we picked out about half a dozen of the flowers that we could identify here, and then you can go back in the coloring book and locate them, because none of the flowers are named on the pages of the coloring book.
Right.
But, you know, that's only maybe half of the plants that are featured in the coloring book. So I think that's another good reason to take it out into the wild and see if you can match up the pictures with the actual plants.
More of the adventure of it, not only the coloring of it, but taking the book out with you to the arboretum and walking around and, what fun.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think that for me, that was one of the driving forces behind this project, was the idea that this could be sort of a gateway to discovery for kids who, you know, maybe haven't spent a lot of time in the arboretum. So if they have fun coloring it, they might develop a connection to the plants. And next time they go to the arboretum, they'll see more than they might have without it.
And doing the research to write the grant, getting kids out in nature is like the most important thing you can do, almost. And that's that's part of the genesis of this, is just to tell a story about nature. And it's a place where local kids can actually go and be in nature and see a squirrel, you know, see a bear carved in a tree. And
an osprey with a fish.
Yes, that happens to be something that happens to people with some regularity walking through the arboretum. Often a semi-eviscerated fish on the pathway.
Fertilizer.
Yes.
Yeah, it's one of the things when I look through the book, you know, it brings to me the word magic, you know, how magical it is, you know, and I love the fairies, you know, can you find the fairies, you know, that they're out there, you just have to believe and you can see them. You know, I mean, as an adult, I lose sort of that shading for the way I see nature. But boy, as a kid, that's magical. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have plans to publish a sequel?
I don't know.
What
we ended by saying, I'll bring the friends back with me, right? Yeah. That's the final page.
Mm-hmm.
We have not talked about that. I think we've just been happy to get it out and get through the holidays and settle into jobs and activities. I don't know. Maybe we should. I actually like the idea of a moose.
Yeah, a moose would be
fun. You know, moose on the loose.
Mighty, munching, meandering
talk
moose.
Talk about a brain that continues to go on. Mm-hmm. You know, this would make, I'm thinking, you know, great gifts. Valentine's Day is coming up. You know, that would be a fun thing to do. Once again, where can one find a copy of the book?
Vanderford's, the corner bookstore, Carousel.
The Museum.
Museum.
Guild.
And All Seasons Floral. And this spring, it'll be at other floral places like Astor Design Center and the Pondre Garden Center. They are closed for the season.
Right.
So we'll have wider distribution in the spring, and we're hoping that the spring brings more sales.
How wonderful. Anything in conclusion before we move into the part of the Thursday morning show of upcoming events. Anything in conclusion? Any people you want to thank? Mary couldn't be here?
No, Mary couldn't be here. Thank the Native Plant Society, the Lois Wythe Grant Committee. And I really liked something Hannah said about the continuation of this grant. You hoped that it would...
Oh, I hope that the grant is able to continue supporting artists and other creative folks to connect with the Arboretum and continue creating projects inspired by it. I love that a project like this, which is, you know, fairly simple in its scope, can bring creative people together and inspire them to do something for their community. And hopefully it reaches a lot of kids who enjoy coloring it and visiting the Arboretum.
I guess for me, too, in my background in I like STEM education, but I like STEAM education even more. When you get science, technology, electronics, arts. I'm a STEAM advocate. So this book has
hit a lot of bells for you.
Yeah, it really did. And I think incorporating the arts into education is super important. So this kind of a project that emphasizes the creative part, but also the science. I like that a lot.
How did it get to Australia? It's been bugging me this whole time.
Via U.S. mail and Australian Post. I have my oldest daughter lives in Australia.
Okay.
And she wanted many copies, and she gave them to her friends who have children. So that's how it got to Australia. And so it's very happy. And my granddaughter, who's six and has a birthday in February, wants copies for everyone who comes to her birthday party. So we're negotiating that at this point.
How isn't it great conceptually, you know, that this little creation from Sandpoint, Idaho, is in a different hemisphere and on a different continent and bringing joy?
It's in Germany, too.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm looking forward to Moose on the Loose.
Yes.
And
as me as well. That will be a me as well? I as well?
You as well.
Me too.
We're all well.
I'm into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a great idea. Do the Moose one.
Do the Moose one. I mean, rest on your laurels on this. Enjoy where it goes and then see where your energy is. And if, you know, Moose on the Loose, there are a lot of people out there who are just intrigued by the fact that we have a moose walking around town. Mm-hmm. You know?
They sure are funny characters, so it would be entertaining to draw.
I cannot imagine. I mean, they you look at them and you think, boy, are they nerdy. But, you know, you don't want to get too close to them.
That's true.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to thank Patty Erickson, Hannah Combs, and again, Jack, you read the title because it's a tongue twister.
It is. Busy Buzzy Bombus Bee, Can You Color What I See? It's a coloring book available locally and internationally as well, but locally is going to be the easiest way for you to get it. Adventures in the North Idaho Native Plant Arboretum, the subtitle, written by Patty Erickson and Mary Toland and illustrated by Hannah Combs. And it is indeed a wonderful little book and illustrated by Hannah Combs, but really illustrated, I suppose, by the end user because it is a coloring book.
It's waiting for the final artist to add his or her touch.
Yes.
Thank you both so much for coming in on this rainy morning.
It's been delightful.
And come back anytime. I've got another B song. This is Tom Petty from his Wildflowers album, I think from the mid-90s. This is called Honey Bee.
All right, here we go. A little number we call.